Hello, my fine friends, and welcome back to another episode of Destination Discourse. I am your host, one of your hosts, Stuart Butler, and I am joined, as ever, by my good friend and dark side or light side of the industry, Adam Stoker. How are you, Adam?
I'm great, Stuart. I'm excited to chat today. We've got a couple of fun topics that I think I'm going to enjoy debating you with here today.
Yeah, I feel like this is the one. Like, we've gone through like the nerves a little bit. We had our first guest on last week. Now, I feel like we can start taking the gloves off a little bit. Don't you think?
I'm ready.
All right. So let's jump in today, shall we? I want to jump in with like what is now regarded by at least one person as the greatest segment in all of destination marketing media. And that is, of course, Stu's News.
Now, hold on a second. Hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
I worked really hard and spent at least, I don't know, yeah, 5-7 minutes creating mm-hmm. a jingle for Stu's News using AI, a platform called Udio. And I mm-hmm. sent that to you, and yeah, yet we're not inserting that jingle here. And I'm curious as to why.
Well, how do I say this diplomatically? the jingle you sent was garbage. I don't know. And I don't blame it at all, because I've used it a lot and we've created some really fun little sound bites. So I gotta go ahead and say that is a picnic problem. You ever heard of a picnic problem?
I haven't. What's the picnic problem?
Okay. It's another way of saying it's user error, but it's problems in chair, not in computer. It's a picnic problem. So I gotta say that the you know, we talked about AI on this show before, and we both agree, I think, that AI is a great companion. It's a co-pilot, right? But you should always have human in the loop. And I think in this case, the human in the loop let down the AI. That's you know, my opinion.
My problem is I feel like it was so on the nose perfect that you got a little self-conscious with it. That's my concern.
Maybe. It did put a lot of pressure on it, you know? So maybe that's it. Maybe we'll revisit that maybe for episode 5. Who knows? Okay.
Deal.
All right. So what is today's Stu's News? So what I found is it was an article. I received this from a Destinations International newsletter. If you're not involved with DI, you absolutely should be. A great resource. Most DMOs are members, and they send out some really cool information. I get a lot of value out of it. But they were talking in this most recent newsletter about Barcelona. And I think we've all seen, everyone in the industry has sort of seen Barcelona become the poster child for anti-tourism sentiment within the residential community. And so we've sort of seen the images of folks with water guns spraying their tourists and whatnot. And so this article specifically, let me share my screen actually, because I want to bring this up. This is actually from the Barcelona DMO. I'm assuming it's the DMO that produced this.
Especially since it came through DI, I would assume that the DMO was the one behind it.
Yeah, I would think so too. So let's see if this works. Here we go. So can you see my screen, Adam?
I can.
Can everyone at home see my screen? Yes, Stuart, we can. So this is sort of their response, right? They obviously had a problem. So they probably had an emergency meeting, because DMOs and bureaucracies in general like to do that. They bring together stakeholders and say, here's our problem, let's solve it. And so this is what they came up with, right? Which is this campaign to educate the visitors. And they put signage throughout the destination. And they have sort of 4 or 5 talking points of expectations for the visitors, right? And it ranges from things that you would expect, like, behave like a human being. Don't be screaming late at night because there's residents living here. But it also gets into things like trash, like whether you or not you're going to drop trash on the floor, like find a place. And then it goes all the way down to water consumption, like using, because Barcelona's had some droughts and some water shortages. And so it talks about things like water shortages. So I don't know, Adam, if we want to sort of pick each one of these apart or talk about this from a macro level, but I have some pretty strong opinions on this. Like, there's a lot I like about this campaign, But there's a lot that I feel like there's opportunity to maybe do a little better. But what's your initial take on this approach?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I would say your Jim Gaffigan impression where you quoted our audience, I think that's also a segment that needs to return to this show. I'm offended for our audience that that's what you suggest that they sound like. This article, Stuart, is really interesting to me. In fact, if you scroll down to the very bottom, I think the final bolded statement is where the core of the problem with this article is.
Where am I
Uncivil
going here?
behaviors will be penalized, is
Oh, yeah.
very clearly outlined there. And this is where I'm going to give Barcelona a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here, because and it's also the reason that I'm hesitant to do international marketing, especially when there's a translation that needs to happen in the process, because I could see a world where this was written in Spanish in Barcelona. And somebody said, well, we just need to translate this to English. And the tone of the way they wrote it in Spanish may not have come through the way they intended, because if it was a linear translation without the correct tone coming across, it's very, I would say, condescending and almost dominant, it sounds like. And this it's like it's not the DMO, it's the police force speaking. And my suggestion here would be, if this is a translation issue, we always have to remember it's not what you say, it's how you say it that affects how it's interpreted. And I think the how you say it here was a real problem.
I agree. And I think I wonder, I would love someone from Barcelona to come on here and talk about this and what the objectives were and who was behind it. I'm going to stop sharing for right now, but I think for me, what likely happened, right, is you saw this anti-tourism sentiment come from the locals. And Barcelona is a tricky city. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's the residential population is integrated with the tourism areas, right? So when someone comes out of a bar at 10, 11 o'clock at night and is making a hoopla, there are people living right around that, you know? And so I think that's one of the points of contention is the tourists were disrupting the local residents. And that's not necessarily a friction point in all destinations. Like Malta Beach is very much, we have residential areas and then we have like the visitor areas. And they certainly mingle in entertainment hubs, but in terms of where the hotels are, there's not many people live where the hotels are and stuff like that. So we don't necessarily have that problem. So I think it's a real problem, but likely what happened here is elected officials were getting a lot of pressure from the residents, and elected officials went to the DMO and said, we need fewer tourists, or we need to spread them out, or you know, whatever they're talking about. And so they collaborated and came up with this sort of plan to try to modify the behavior of the tourists. And for anyone that's ever tried to get a visitor to do anything, it's hard, right? Because you don't have a lot of time with them to educate them. Their mindset is one of, I'm paying a lot of money to come to your destination. Who are you to tell me how to behave? So even if you can reach them, they're not really receptive to a message. And so I worry that this campaign is trying to treat a symptom without really getting to the root of the problem. And I don't know what the solution is, but I think they're potentially attacking it from the wrong end. I don't necessarily think it's going to be successful in terms of modifying behavior. It might be successful from a resident perspective because it might end up alienating a lot of visitors and turn what's historically being perceived as a welcoming place into a hostile environment, right? And so I think they could see fewer tourists coming. And I think that might be part of the motivation for why they did this campaign, because there's probably a friction or a tension between the folks that want to get elected by residents and the businesses that are relying on tourists, right? And so they don't want to just say, let's bring in less visitors. So let's come up with this modification plan, this rehabilitation plan. And I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence it's going to have the impact that they think it's going to have.
Well, and the other thing that I'll say is the and of course I haven't seen the entire campaign. I haven't seen all the budget that was put behind it or whatever. But what I can see on the landing page is that what you have is a lot of instructive writing.
Yeah, it's finger
And
wagging.
yeah, and to me, my problem with that is if you really are committed to a campaign, you're not just going to put some words on a page. And I would expect to see how tourism behavior has affected local residents and caused problems for them in their life and why they need tourists to be more respectful.
It should be storytelling. Yeah.
Yes. We're not telling a story. We're just saying, stay the hell out of here. And I think that is, for one, like you mentioned, maybe we won't always have tourists. You know, over tourism is something that gets a lot of attention when times are good. And then it's a problem that people would love to have when times are bad. And I would say that it does seem like we're maybe teetering on the edge of that pendulum swinging back to not so much good times over the next several years. And what a time to release this campaign that essentially says, we don't want you here. In fact, we're not even willing to put budget behind providing content and telling the stories of why we need you to behave differently. Just stay the hell out of here. I just think the tone and timing is a real problem here.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. There's I forget the name of it. There's a psychological phenomenon that basically has been stress tested for decades and is considered very solid, which if you tell someone to do something, there's a percentage of likelihood that they're going to do it. But if they make the decision to do it, the likelihood they're going to follow through is significantly greater, right? So it's in sales, you sort of think about, rather than telling someone click this link or buy this product, you get them to desire the product or want the outcome from the product. And then when they make that decision, they're a lot more likely to follow through. And so I think you're right in that this campaign is trying to tell people what to do versus show them why they should do what they want them to do. And then more people will comply. And it is, well, I think, again, it goes back to storytelling. There's not a lot of storytelling. To give them their dues, I don't know. I mean, we're judging this on a landing page and an article in DI, right? I do know they had in-market expression of this campaign. There were physical signs and things like that. But from what I could tell, it was just similar to the website. It was just instructed. So they could have had a video campaign. They could have had a social campaign that was a companion piece to this. And to me, that would have been a much better approach. So yeah, hopefully they did that.
I think for people listening, though, the comparison that I would make is we've all seen the video of kids when you have a sign that says, do not press the red button. And we all know that if there's a sign that says, don't press the red button, a large percentage of people are going to press the dang red button. And so if you just have signage throughout the destination, you need to make people feel something. If you want somebody to do something, you need them to feel something. And there's nothing about what I saw that would make anybody feel something. I think that's the main issue.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about this in the storytelling episode we did a couple of episodes ago. It's like, it starts with an emotion, right? It's a feeling that leads to a thought that leads to an action. It's feel, think, do. That's the order that you change someone's behavior. And you can't take a shortcut there. You really can't. If they don't feel anything, they're not going to make the action. So you got to change them through emotion first. So I don't know. I feel like we've been pretty critical. This is destination discourse. I want to give them credit for trying to resolve the challenge, right? Because they had a bad PR situation going on. And this is somewhat reacting to that as well, saying, hey, yeah, we have a problem, but we're trying to deal with it. And that I give them credit for sure. So hopefully this works.
We're wrong, come on the show and tell us why we're wrong and let's have a conversation.
Yeah, love it. Yeah. Yeah. Because what this show is going to be is a couple of people, you know, we'll be on guys and gals on the show that have a lot of confidence in their opinions, but they are just that, right? They are opinions. And so we are honest enough to ourselves and to the audience to change our opinions. And so, by all means, come and challenge us on any of these topics that we talk about. We invite it. This is Destination Discourse. We want discourse. So let's get into some discourse. Let's talk about the topic today, shall we, Adam? You and I have worked with each other for a couple of years, and I feel like one of the places we bumped heads a little bit. You know, we agree on a lot of things, but one of the places that I've been pretty not critical, but I pushed back a little bit is. And I don't know if this is semantics or if it's philosophical, but I hate with a passion the use of the term funnel. Like conversion funnels, to me, there's a place for them in terms of optimizing a line of something, but I fundamentally reject the premise that consumers that are booking travel in a funnel, I believe with immense conviction that people that are traveling are in a journey, and it's a circular journey that can turn into a loyalty loop. It's a really good book called The Loyalty Loop. I think it's like The Customer Loyalty Loop. It talks about that a lot, but I believe it's a continuum. It's ever going. It can actually sprout multiple continuums of journeys, because you're not always necessarily planning one trip. You can be planning more. And I think at any point in that journey, and we'll talk about the steps of that journey, at any point in that journey, you can spin off a new journey and get them to consider to come back to you, especially if you're at a destination like Myrtle Beach, where we get 2/3 of our visitors are repeat visitors. But I've said a lot. I know you're a big fan of funnels to a degree, right? So
yeah,
fight for your position a little bit.
Well, so I'll tell you this. I absolutely fundamentally disagree with the historical marketing funnel. That's awareness, consideration, and purchase. I think customer behavior has long since evolved to where that awareness, consideration, and purchase is not an accurate representation of the marketing funnel. However, I think where you and I are getting into and have gotten into a little bit of a disagreement over this is when you talk about the customer journey, you're talking about an individual customer. And I think a funnel is a great way to kind of look at a mass of leads, opportunities, customers that are coming into your, I'm going to say funnel here, but that are coming into your kind of purview that you want to eventually cause to take action and travel to your destination. And so the reason I think a funnel is helpful is to visualize the mass numbers of people that you're trying to reach. Whereas I think if you're looking at an individual person, of course there's spinoffs and new journeys that start, but I don't see how you can make decisions based on a large number of potential customers on an individual level. I think you have to make some sort of curated decision, hoping to move a large percentage of those people to each next stage of the funnel.
Yeah. And that makes sense. I think as a heuristic, as a simplification, there's a place for a funnel in that regard. If you're trying to optimize, hey, how many people do I get from my ad to my website? How many of those people do I get to my email sign up? Like that is a linear journey with a defined beginning and end, right? I think the problem is people extrapolate that notion to the individual. And I believe DMOs, we should be treating people as individuals, and we should be trying to get as close as we can to talking to an audience of one, in treating people not like users, but like guests and visitors to add destination. And I think there's a couple of things that the funnel create, problems that funnel creates, which I think are long-term systemic problems in the DMO space. And the biggest one is there's a finite beginning and a finite end. Like, we're thinking of people in, okay, I see these people when they hit, right, it's all transactional. I see these people when they hit my ad. I see these people when they're in my website, and I see these people when they book. Now I'm going to move on to the next guy. Right. That's the mentality of a lot of folks. And I think we're missing huge opportunities. So if we think of it as a continuum or a loop, right, you do have like the awareness, consideration, the research purchase part. But then you've got this period, which is vastly underutilized, which is the anticipation, the time between when they've booked and when they stay. Right. And there's a lot of data out there that suggests that people are more happy and more excited during that period than at any other point. Plus, they've already spent the majority of their budget in their mind, right? So now you have an opportunity to do smaller scale upsells to get them to maybe consider spending more when they're in destination, to go to different elevated restaurants or try more attractions, or even get them to stay one more night, right? And it doesn't stop in the anticipation phase, because now the next phase in the loop is the actual stay, right? When they're in destination. Very few DMOs are talking to people in the anticipation phase, and very few are talking to them during the stay. And if you can talk to them there, you have a massive opportunity to influence their decisions on the ground. Then, and again, you can upsell them and get them to stay one more night and all that stuff, which has, imagine if you can get like a 20% of the folks that come to your destination to stay one more night, what impact that would have on your economy. Then you've got the post-stay afterglow, is what we like to call it, where people are super happy and primed to want to go back. They're a little sad they're returning to their normal lives. DMOs are not hitting them back then to say, hey, come back. Here's incentives or here's reasons to come back again, maybe in the off season, da, 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 da. And then that joins back on. That afterglow leads right back, and that's why it's a loop, leads right back again to the awareness consideration. It actually skips awareness a little bit because now they're more aware and goes straight to consideration. So you sort of hijack, you're short-circuiting the typical process. And if you control that whole journey, you don't have to spend as much money on the awareness because now you've got people that are staying longer, booking earlier, spending more, returning more frequently. The higher value visit is less worried about the demographics of the visitor. It's more focused on the value of the visit each time. And then I think long-term you have more success that way. So that's my contention with the funnel is I think it takes our purview too narrow. And we need to widen our aperture and start to say, let's think about this holistically and over time, and we can have more impact.
So I think what we're finding is the place where we maybe disagree is more the use case, because I agree with you wholeheartedly that if we want to put ourselves in the shoes, excuse me. Oh, sorry about that. If we want to put ourselves in the shoes of the potential visitor, I don't think we can look at it as a funnel because the individuals never go through a linear funnel, right? And so I agree with that. But I think if we're trying to make marketing decisions, I think we need to look at a cohort of potential visitors in an effort to reach them effectively through our marketing. That being said, you mentioned after somebody visits, we need to make sure that we're not treating them as, okay, now they're gone and we you know, start all over again, but we need to continue to re-engage with them. The question is, if you have data on this, I'd love to hear it. How often do people rebook to the same place? Are we trying to get them back next year? Are we trying to get them back every 3 years? Are we trying to get them back every 5 years? What's the correct cadence to structure our marketing correctly so that we're not overwhelming somebody that just came and isn't going to do the same type of vacation again next time?
Yeah. I mean, and I'm going to use a sort of a get out of jail free card here a little bit. It depends greatly on the destination, right? If you're a destination like Mala Beach, over 66% of folks that are here at any given time have been here before. They're repeat visitors, right? And it's the kind of destination because we've got 60 miles of beaches, because we have 1,000 attractions, 2,000 restaurants, 80 championship golf courses, like all of the data that we propagandize out there. People can come back here multiple times in a year, have a completely different experience or the same experience if they want it, and it grows with them. And we have people coming back multiple generations, right? And so we're on one end, one dramatic end of a spectrum, right? We're on the extreme end of potential repeat visitation. I mean, we have people that literally come here 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a year. But now if you're like, I don't know, a Hawaii, right? And you're targeting mainland US, you know, people, it could be a once in a lifetime trip. It could be maybe on big anniversaries, but it's probably not going to be a every year. And it's certainly not going to be a multiple times a year destination. So I think you've got to be realistic to what your destination is and what it offers people. But I'll say two things. One, your best next guest is a guest that's already been there and had a great time, right? Your next best guest is the friends and family of the person that's been there and had a great time, because their word of mouth is still the most powerful influencer when it comes to promotions and marketing and compelling people to change behavior, right? That's why we see clusters of origin markets for specific destinations. It sort of starts and grows. And then when you see your friends and families going to Myrtle Beach or a different destination, they're more likely to do it. And so even if you're a destination like Hawaii, where you maybe don't get people three or four times a year, you should be using the afterglow as a lever to get that person to be your evangelist, to be your secret sales force, to be your advocate, and to be promoting you to all of their friends and family.
You know what this sparks for me, Stuart, is a callback to our Barcelona discussion that, you know, people, if your best next guest is somebody that's already been there, maybe instead of telling the mass of visitors the penalties for coming and violating their rules or whatever, instead, what if it's somebody that's already visited, clearly has a great respect for the destination, would like, if they want to come back, they're likely to treat the destination better than a first timer. But when mm-hmm. we look at our relationship with potential visitors as transactional, and I would say most destinations are still kind of stuck in this because of the incentives in the industry that, you know, if you get a hotel booking, then you're demonstrating success, right? But I would actually say that for a Barcelona, maybe it's a redirection of our mass marketing dollars to friends and family of people who have already traveled there, or people who have already traveled there because they're likely to want to take care of the destination so they can come back multiple times. So then I would say your multiple time return visitor is a much higher value visitor than acquiring new visitors who may not respect the destination their first time through.
Yeah, for sure. I think anytime you can move the relationship between a destination or a specific hotel or a specific attraction or restaurant and the visitor from transactional to emotional, you're winning, right? People feel something, and they, especially if they feel ownership of it and pride in it, and you can turn your brand into a part of their DNA, a part of their lifestyle, then they're going to not, they're not only going to behave better, they're also going to defend you. They're going to be a part of the solution, not just not a part of the problem. And so, you know, we think a lot at Myrtle Beach about how do we sort of, it was actually one of the big insights. We had MMGY do a brand study. This is right before I joined. It was like 2019. They were about to launch it in 2020. Some things happened. It was delayed a little bit after that pandemic little thing. One of the research insights that came out was, we need to move the relationship and the perception of Myrtle Beach from transactional to emotional. Like, that relationship shift needs to be happening. So we're deliberately trying to do that. And it manifests in everything we do. So we had an internal meeting yesterday with my creative director and my content manager, and we were looking at the commercial that we're getting ready to shoot in a couple of weeks. And, you know, we've worked with an agency, worked with a production company, with the internal team. And something just wasn't sitting right with me. And we were debating it and really getting down into the minutiae of like every word in the script and little things. And we had an epiphany in this meeting that it was like, oh, this is a transactional message. It's not an emotional message. And we need to tweak that. And just tweaking a few words completely changed the feel of the commercial. And so, but you got to have that as an objective when you're going into these projects, to say, we want this to be emotional, not transactional.
Well, so in that case, then there has to be a formula for making that emotional connection as opposed to a transactional connection. And this is where I want to kind of pull it back to the funnel discussion that we were having. We talked about the prior funnel that was awareness, consideration, and purchase. That's a transactional funnel. That is entirely designed to create transactions. I look at the funnel a little bit differently, and I would say if we are, you know, looking at a large number of potential visitors, I think it aligns really well with your definition of a customer journey. I think where our, you know, disagreement falls apart is when we're talking about an individual visitor, because I agree with you, this funnel isn't necessarily going to tie specifically to an individual visitor. But I believe that in order for people to transact with you, I think the first step is they do have to be aware of you in some way. But the big change for me is instead of going straight to consideration, which I believe is asking a lot of a visitor, is we then all we need to do is get them to engage. So the second step in the funnel, as I see it, is engagement of some sort. That's pressing play on a piece of content, that's going to your website, that's a variety of different types of possible actions, but engagement in some form. And then I see active community as the third step. And the reason this is really important is because if you're looking for just transactional one-time visitation, I think that that consideration is important to go to. But if you want to build a relationship with that consumer, I think getting them to become part of your community in some way, maybe they're commenting on your social media or liking your different posts on social media, or even sharing an article that you've posted or a video that you've posted, that's becoming part of your active community. And in a lot of cases during that time, they'll give you permission, for example, joining your email list, to communicate with them on an ongoing basis. And then after active community, I then see the phase as being inspiration. Once they've joined your community, you at that point have permission to inspire them to actually try to plan a visit. And then, of course, you want them to actually transact or convert. And the part that you added that I really liked when we were kind of debating what this funnel should look like is advocacy. You can have people that don't ever come to your destination, but are still advocates of your destination. And if you build the correct type of relationship with potential visitors, I think that's a realistic thing. It's not just a pipe dream.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, and not every destination is necessarily going to be able to be equipped to do that. And, you know, I think there is a place for the transactional relationship. There's a lot of destinations that if I was going to use a food or restaurant analogy, right, there's Myrtle Beach has a lot of these, like there's a seafood buffet mentality where people very transactional. They want the value comes in the volume, and they were going to get people in and out as quick as they can. And it's transactional, but then you can create like an experience. And I don't know why this is the one that came to my head. I think I have a friend that's working with them as a client right now, but in Colorado, you got Casa Bonita, which is a Mexican restaurant that just has this impressive experience that the details were paid attention to up front. And now they have a fanatical following. So to the point where like they don't have to market. They don't have to market at all because people are lined up out of the door every day, and it's months to get on the waiting list for a place like that, right? So which of those is your better suited for your destination? You know, are you going to push a lot of people through with an average product, or are you going to create an experience and a relationship that's special and meaningful in an emotional connection that yields you the potential to make more profit, have a bigger impact on your community than just volumes of people?
Then let me ask you a question on that, because I think a lot of destinations that are listening are going to say, well, because of the way my funds are legislated or because of the dynamics in my destination, I can't have any control over the experience. I can't get stakeholders to do certain things. I can't get restaurants to do certain things. So I can't improve the experience. So should I be trying to bang my head against the wall on that side of things, or do I continue to provide volume to a mediocre product?
So this is probably a whole nother episode, Adam, because I think to me, you could say we don't have that alignment today in my destination, right? But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be working towards it. Like alignment between the stakeholders in your community is probably your biggest asset. If you can get that alignment, if you can have a seat at the table, there's nothing more valuable. It will remove all kinds of hurdles. And in fact, we got back from a retreat with our board. We go to a different destination every year with our board of directors. I don't know many DMOs that do this, but it's been really valuable to us. Because not only do we get to bond with our board of directors and they get to know us a little bit more, but we get to learn from another destination that's doing things right. And we just came back from Savannah. Mm-hmm. And Savannah's a beautiful city, obviously has a lot going on. My biggest takeaway from that is the alignment in that city is phenomenal. And to the point that, you know, locally here, we'll squabble. I combine the two over like a few million dollars of money that is being used for promotion that should be used on product or whatever. Seems like Savannah's figured it out. They have alignment to the point where they're getting the state to pay for a massive convention center renovation and expansion. They're doubling the size of their convention center. And it's not being paid with local money, it's being paid with state money. They just built a big arena. And again, a lot of that's coming from state money. And so if you can get alignment within your community and stop squabbling about the, you know, your tourism funds or whatever, and start to go to your state house or to a federal representative and say, we need money from another place, from out of our market to support us because we're giving so much back in tax revenue to the state. I think you're going to solve the part of the product problem, right? It's not the DMO's job to create the product. It's our job to promote the product. And it is in our interest to have an elevated product because we can only promote what we have, right? We can only shine a light on and amplify the product that exists. So I think you got to get alignment and you got to develop the product, but not on your own. It's a team effort. And I think one of the roles of the DMO or Chamber of Commerce should be that convener and create that sort of coalition between those stakeholders. If you're butting heads with your local chamber or your local city or your local county or whatever it is, you're never going to be able to accomplish what you need to accomplish. You're always going to be fighting uphill.
So every DMO has a very finite amount of budget and bandwidth. What percentage should they be allocating towards product development or product improvement or even being the convener that you're describing? Because again, I still feel like the pushback is going to be budget and bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. And my response to that is there's not a DMO in this world that has enough budget. Right. Even the most well-funded DMO, like you look at like a Las Vegas, they got $300 million a year, whatever their budget is. I think that's the number I've seen. Or us, we're very well-funded and people will argue we have too much money and whatnot. The opportunity, if you can get alignment to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars, significantly more than you're spending on promotion, increases dramatically if you have that in alignment internally. And part of that alignment is on the DMO to justify its position, to measure and accurately represent its performance, and to show stakeholders how what you're doing has an impact. And that if you don't do what you're doing, the impact of that is not positive, right? And so whenever money's involved, especially if you get to large sums of money, there's always going to be people that want to grab at it. That's inevitable. And I think that's the situation a lot of DMOs run into. But I think we have a responsibility to tell our story and convert the detractors to believers by engaging them transparently and showing them how what we're doing has an impact. Now, that's easy if you believe that you're having an impact. But if you're just running through the motion and running the same campaigns this year that you did last year, you can't justify it, right? Because you're not putting in the effort on the front end to yield the results on the back end. So if you're using funnels, old antiquated funnels, and not loyalty loops, and then it's gonna be hard to get that alignment.
And I think the takeaway for me is regardless of what we're calling the process of getting visitation, whether it's a loyalty loop, a customer journey, or a marketing funnel, you've got to build a long-term relationship with your potential visitors. And if your marketing plan is structured around short-term transactional one-time relationships, I don't think your cathedral building, which also could be a completely separate episode. You've talked a lot about cathedral building, that the benefits of what we do may not even be felt in the time that we are in our roles, but we still mm-hmm. have to build for the future. And we can't just look at our roles on an annual basis.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, this concept of a continuum or a loyalty loop or journey or whatever with our visitor relationship, it's the same mentality you should approach to your stakeholders too, right? If you go to your city council or your county council or others, and it's all a transactional conversation, it's a give and take, it's how can I move this money to here, or how can I do this thing for you today? And you don't have a common goal, a North Star that's driving you all in alignment towards that, you're not going to be successful. So I think treating everything like a relationship in an emotional connection versus a transactional connection will improve your performance. You'll get a lot more done in general. So I rest my case, Your Honor. Loops are better than funnel.
You know what? I think you've definitely changed my perspective on it to a point. I still want a solution for, and we won't solve this today, but for doing your process that you're describing en masse. And I don't know. I think there's a place for the marketing funnel, but to your point, you have to be building those relationships, and the funnel does not provide you the full picture of how to do that. I think you have to focus a little bit more on some of the tactics you described, especially in a loyalty loop.
All right, let me put a cherry on top and give you a specific example that rebuts what you just said, right? So
Okay, great.
let me tell you what I think I heard, right? You think to optimize en masse, like a large set of people, data, users is probably the term you would use because you're so clinical about this. In order to do that, you've got to take shortcuts and you got to treat some things as a heuristic, right? As a rule of a group of people. And you could infinitely segment that however you want, right? That could be based on demographics or geography or whatever. My point is, if you segment that down to the individual, you're going to be more effective. And so let me use email as a prime example, right? Because it's one of the places I think we make the biggest mistake.
Yeah.
If I have a 200,000 person, not user, person database, that's not 200,000 emails. That's the ability to develop a relationship with 200,000 individual people, right? That's what it is. And if we treat it as 200,000 email addresses, what we're going to do is we're going to send out an email blast and we're going to maybe run an A/B test on the subject line to optimize the funnel, right? Because, oh, now our open rate's a little higher. Now our click-through rate's a little higher. That's the funnel we're focused on. But at the end of the day, I'm only ever going to be able to send maybe one a month, maybe two a month emails to those people, right? So for every one of those 200,000 individual people, I can maybe develop that relationship through email, maybe 12 to 24 times a year. And every one of those is going to be generic enough that they don't really care about the majority of what I'm saying to them. And I'm probably hitting them at a time when it's inconvenient and they're not even in the buying cycle, right? They're not in the journey of or whatever. If you take that and think about them as individuals and you nurture individual paths for everyone that have triggered on events and behaviors versus just this generic approach. Well, let me say, okay, if I see the Adam, the email address, and I know who Adam is, and I've built a profile on Adam, and I know what he likes, every time I see him come to my website, I can trigger a new journey, which is a conversation with Adam to say, tell me a little bit more about what you're looking for, and let me provide value back to you and help you, right? And I can probably trigger four or five or six emails in that process, and you're going to feel value from it because I'm personalizing it and you're getting what you want. Now, okay, Adam's got to the next point. He's made a booking, or I know he's come into that destination. Now he's in that pre-arrival anticipation phase. Oh, I can send you a handful of emails through that process because they're relevant to you. And now I know you're in market. Oh, I can send a handful of emails to you that are really hyper relevant to you. Now you're in the afterglow, right? So now every time you're in that consideration set and at certain points of the funnel, I could probably send hundreds of emails to you in a year and develop that relationship, provide more value to you, and you would feel better about it than the 12 or 24 transactional emails that I'm sending to you in a year. So
See,
that's why I think we need to think differently.
but I have a problem with the example that you're using because email is one of the convenient places where we actually have the ability to drill down to the individual consumer. How do I apply that to my TV advertising or my YouTube advertising? And I know that there's some, data connections that we can make, but when you don't have the convenience of drilling down to the individual person, that's where I feel like the funnel still works. I'm not going to argue with you all day about it, but that's my problem with email as the example is because I think it conveniently gives you the ability to actually drill down to the point where you're saying.
Well, of course, I'm going to cherry pick the one that fulfills my argument the best, right? All I guess we'll have to resurface this one. We're out of time today, guys, but thank you all for watching and listening. And we do invite you to join the conversation. We're going to be pushing these out. It's on video right now. We're going to have an audio version of this only at some point, but we do want this to turn into a community, and we don't want it just to be Adam and myself talking to each other about the things we've probably already talked to each other about a million times already. So we want to invite people, whether you're on the dark side of the evil vendors of our community, or if you're one of the noble and righteous DMO people, we want to bring you in. And we also want to, we'll probably try to bring in some outside expertise too, because I think that's something that's often missing from our industry as well. But this is, think of this show as a love letter to our industry. We do get critical. We sort of poke holes. It's in our nature. But really, the purpose of this is to try to encourage everyone to be a little bit better tomorrow than they were today. And that's how we try to operate our organizations, and we hope the industry will continue to operate in that direction too. So, Adam, if they want to get involved with you or find out more about you, where can they do that?
Yeah, connect with me on mytourismiq.com or send me an email at adam@relicagency.com.
Great. And if you want to reach me, if you want to be a guest on the show, if you have a burning topic you want us to cover and you want to be a part of that or not, you can hit me up, stuart.butler@visitmodelbeach.com, and you can also hit me up on Tourism IQ or LinkedIn. But thanks again, everyone, for listening. Until next time, this has been the Destination Discourse. Do-do-do-do-do.